Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, December 20th edition of Byers & Company. This hour, Senator Andy Menar, Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports, plus our gift of the day. It all starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
You know, about a week ago, I declared this a political free zone until the end of the year. But our good friend Senator Andy Menar is going to be our last political guest of 2017. And we're happy to do so. We're even happier he's on the phone this morning because we understand he's under the weather a little bit. We don't need that in the studios. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good this morning, actually. But it's one of those things where as the day goes on, it gets worse.
I hate that, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we hope you feel better for Christmas with you and your family. So I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about politics at all today because, quite frankly, I just have had enough for 2017. I can't even imagine what you feel like on the other end of that. But I do want to ask you about this tax reform and this legislation in Washington, and then ask you if this isn't sort of part of the problem, where Republicans will tell you that everything in this is going to solve everybody's problems and it's perfect, and Democrats are going to tell you that nothing in this is going to do anything but kill people. How are the American people supposed to believe when both sides drink the Kool-Aid so much that no one can even agree on just common sense stuff?
Well, I think that underscores why there's so much division in the country, Brian, not just on politics, but it's kind of permeated everything in society right now. I think the fact that there's two sets of facts almost constantly on every issue sows more division. And I think the fact of the matter is that there's probably some things in that bill, for example, lowering the corporate tax rate, where there would have been wide agreement between Democrats and Republicans. And then there's some things in that bill that I just completely disagree with. But I don't think that the politics of the bill that we're hearing are absolutely correct on either side. I think what I would have liked to have seen was a bipartisan bill, which I think was probably possible at one point in time. My fear with this bill is it's going to be just like the Affordable Care Act and the debate that we saw on that almost about a decade ago, I guess, maybe 8 years, where one side spends every ounce of energy defending it, the other side spends every ounce of energy trying to rip it apart, and something in the middle probably would have been much better for the country.
I don't disagree with any of that. And you know, the unforeseen or at least the ignored consequences and long-term consequences, you know, if you have a conversation with our friend Tanya Andrix down at Crossings Healthcare, they're seeing a whole new clientele, and they're seeing it because of the Affordable Health Care Act, because no one can afford their deductibles.
Yeah, I did. I was at Crossing a couple weeks ago. I visited every hospital in the 48th District and every health clinic, 14 in total in about 3 days. And that was one of the outcomes. I learned a lot on that three-day kind of tour of 10,000 strong employers in the 48th District. And I heard that at Crossing. I heard it at Pena Community Hospital. I heard it at the FQHC in my own hometown that is the front line of substance abuse right now in Little Bunker Hill, but they're seeing more and more people who can't afford that deductible, and that has to be dealt with. It has to be dealt with.
But don't you think, and I really, honest to God, this is the end of the year, and I don't want this to be political at all, but not a single Democrat that defended the Affordable Health Care Act said that 8 years ago you'll all be going to clinics because you can't afford your deductible, but you'll have insurance.
No, that's exactly the point that you made the first time with the tax bill, you know, earlier in the conversation. So one thing I heard was what you just said, which is too many people are coming in and they can't afford their deductibles. And these aren't people that qualify for Medicaid, for example. Another thing I heard was the uninsured rate has gone down tremendously. And in some cases, it has worked very well for people. When for example, Medicaid expansion captured more working parents, that was a good thing. So another thing that was left off, I heard this everywhere, and I talked to a constituent yesterday that lives in Montgomery County, and she, for the first time, is facing a $3,900 per month bill for her medicine that's going to keep her alive that just a few years ago cost her a fraction of that. Those are the types of things that we ought to be talking about, because those are the things that are going to change the healthcare system for the better and change the lives of people for the better.
Yeah, and for most of us, like us here, our insurance is twice what it used to be, and our deductible is five times higher.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I go. I don't talk about this often. This is one reason why this is a tough time of year for me. I'm not whining, Brian, so don't get me wrong, but I've had asthma since I was a three-year-old kid, and it was chronic whenever I was little. So this time of year, when I get a cold, it's really difficult for me to go outside when the temperature's low. So the medicine I take for that, as you know, 42 years old now, has more than tripled in cost. I can do that, right? I can budget. I can afford to do that. I am fortunate. But there are so many people with little kids that are 3 years old, just like I was a long time ago, that can't. And I can't imagine the lives of those children and what they have to go through.
All right. Let's talk about another health issue. We held a town hall meeting, which is, you can get the podcast at nowdecatur.com, with all of the major health executives, with law enforcement, with the state's attorney's office, with social services, about the opioid problem we have in this country. It seems to be moving east to west across this country. States like Ohio have been decimated. You heard a lot of that during the presidential primary runs. And yet there are so many complicit folks in this conversation. I don't know how we tackle it. We literally have, I would stand at the front of the line to sue the pharmaceutical companies like they did the tobacco companies to combat this, because they lied to Congress. They pushed this stuff out there. They bribed doctors. I mean, there have been all kinds of people caught doing all kinds of things. And now you have 67-year-old grandmothers with no criminal record being arrested for buying heroin on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about it?
Well, first of all, my compliments for the program. I listened to it. I wasn't able to be there that night, but I listened to it afterwards. And I think it did a good job of illustrating the challenge that we face. And first off, we should recognize this isn't just one segment of society. It's not one race. It's not one particular geographic cluster in Illinois or in the country. It's everyone. It doesn't discriminate on age, anything, race, geography. This is affecting everyone. I see it in my own hometown, Brian. And down the street from me, I know what's going on, and that wasn't there a few years ago. More oftentimes than not, because of how drugs have been marketed, opiate drugs have been marketed, more oftentimes than not, almost in every case, actually. When I visit a clinic, for example, the Maple Street Clinic in Gillespie or Crossing Healthcare in Decatur, people that come in that want help, that say, I need help, I have a problem, started off by having an injury at work or an injury at home, maybe a fall or something, and they became addicted to a prescription, a legally prescribed prescription. And when that prescription was turned off, they pivoted to heroin, which was cheaper and, of course, more addictive, more deadly. That's a big problem. So there's a lot in what I just said, but two things are for certain. We have to go after this from the perspective of legal prescriptions. I don't want to say you can't manage pain. You know, if you're in chronic pain, I don't want to say that. But we have to shut off that spigot. And it's criminal. It's criminal how this has happened over the course of many years with the federal government. But number two, there's a waiting list right now in the 48th District for individuals who have come forward to say, on their own fruition, I have a problem and it's affecting my family and I want to do something about it. But they're turned away because we don't have the capacity to treat them. We have to address that, too, because when someone voluntarily walks through the door and says, I want to fix my life, I think it's our responsibility as a state government to say, we want to do everything we can to help you do that. And we're not getting that done right now. So that's something that we have to continue to work on. And we have all kinds of budget constraints, which we know. But this is one that we have to get right. And that's something that I hope we can get done in the coming fiscal year. And by the way, I don't think that's not a Republican-Democrat thing. I think there's wide support for trying to figure out how do we efficiently use resources so that when people walk through the doors at Maple Street Clinic in Gillespie, They have a waiting list of several dozen right now, just in that small town, Brian, in Gillespie.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It actually impacts rural areas more statistically.
Absolutely.
But the problem, part of the problem, I mean, there's so many fronts. I mean, it's what's going on down in Mexico. When we legalized marijuana here, they quit growing marijuana and started growing poppies. It's fentanyl from China, which is what's causing a lot of these overdoses because you don't know about the dosage. You have no idea. You can order this stuff over the internet. It's the federal government and how they reimburse hospitals. And I know this pain question is going to evidently come off the survey with the new year. But if patients throw a fit because they can't get prescription drugs, then the hospitals are punished about in how they're reimbursed. We have to change all of this.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did a Facebook post a couple months ago when CVS made a corporate decision not to fill prescriptions for certain opiates past, I think it was a week, you know, a week's worth of prescriptions. That sparked a discussion on Facebook on my page, which I engaged in, from good for them all the way to, wait a second, I have chronic pain and I don't know how to manage my pain and it's hard for me to get to my pharmacy in order to get what I need. So there's a whole lot in between those two points of view. And whatever is the solution, I think we got to come up with it because this is something that it just continues to permeate. And its roots in communities and neighborhoods are getting very, very deep. And we have to do everything we can to stop it.
Yeah, and then not to mention all the ripple effect it has on all other crime, because what people
That's
will
right.
do once they're addicted.
Right.
And I would encourage everyone, sometimes people just poo-poo this addiction notion, that there's, and I've read a lot about this recently, that there's scientific data that shows if you have the right DNA, if you have the right makeup, the right physiology, you go in for surgery because you injured your knee in basketball, there are people that can become addicted to this in three
yeah.
days. Three
yeah.
days.
You know, my wife visits area high schools, and she's a social worker, and she works with teen mothers and fathers so that they stay in high school. She's been doing this for several years now, and what she is seeing now with addiction, with high school students and their children, you know, their children, their babies, is stunning. It is stunningly alarming, and we should all pause and say to ourselves, what is society going to look like if we have a generation of infants who are addicts when they are born to teen parents? And that is something that we should all stop and assess and do everything we can to motivate government, you know, motivate the private sector, both of which I would say are very motivated, to work together to try to address this, because it will have a generational impact without question.
There's no doubt. And one thing that won't change for me in 2018 is the expectation level for you and all of your compatriots there in Springfield to put down the Kool-Aid and start working together to fix this country. Most of us are not all the way right or all the way left or all Democrat or all Republican, but this division crap has got to stop, and we need leadership coming out of that town over there to help us fix problems and not keep blaming each other for everything that's wrong. It's got to stop.
Yeah, and I use the school funding bill as a good example of how to do that. And
yeah, but how long did that take?
It took 5 years.
Right.
It took 5 years.
Well,
in
the opioid crisis, we don't have 5 years. All right, let me get to the thing on Monday night. Thanks for coming over, by the way. And
it was remarkable.
All right.
That's a game changer. Game changer for kids in Decatur.
I think so too, and I think it's a realistic game changer. I mean, it's a square peg in a square hole. We have these jobs. We're not telling these kids about these jobs. You ask these kids from District 61 about agribusiness, and if they have anything at all to add, it's farming, which is the tiniest percentage of the jobs in agribusiness. So this certainly makes sense to me, and because of the generosity of the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, they're going to have this incredible Duane Andreas Academy and FFA program. I was talking to the young gentleman who's the Section 16 president. He's a Moreau Forsyth kid, actually mm-hmm. the football coach's son. And these kids at District 61 are going to have a program that will be the envy of FFA programs everywhere.
It will, and it's going to happen in the agribusiness capital of the country. Which is, when you put those two things together, is a recipe for incredible success, not just for local economics and local employment, but for children and for students who are wanting to do big things in their life This will open up doors that I don't think we can even begin to imagine today, Brian, for kids that haven't even thought about it yet.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, ADM and Tate and Lyle. It's the trades. And I know you're familiar and friendly with a number of the unions that are around here. But everybody's struggling to diversify their workforce, to get young kids to be interested. I want people to be traders on the ADM floor. I want them to be executives. But I also want them to be welders and electricians and truck drivers. All of these things are under this agribusiness umbrella.
And I think if you look at the audience, you know, where I sat in the back and observed, and there was an incredible cross-section of the economy and representatives of different sectors of the economy that typically don't, and this isn't meant in a negative way, but don't often find themselves in the same room. And I think that is just another bit of evidence of how important what happened on Monday is to Decatur Public Schools and to the community and the economy of Decatur. Having, you know, for example, Joe Riley and Bart Greenwood were sitting in front of me who represent the local laborers and the pipe trades. Then you had teachers and you had the Education Foundation and the school board and Chris Olson from Tate and Lyle and representatives from ADM and city government. You know, that doesn't happen all that often. And I think that is recognition of how many doors, what is going to happen through this program, how many doors are going to be open for students that will give them incredible possibilities to compete in today's economy. And that, for whatever reason, hasn't been the case. And one thing that I just continue to say about Decatur is that there's such a can-do attitude by so many people right now. They're not worried about the past. People are looking ahead to the future, and that's, you know, kudos to you and to everybody else who continues to turn good things out for the future. And that's just another example on Monday. And I want to say it again. There are kids that haven't even thought about this yet, but it will change their lives for the better, and it will help Decatur for years to come.
Senator Menar, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
You too. Merry Christmas. Thanks, Brian.
Senator Andy Menar, our last political guest of the year. I declared a political free zone, but he came over for our thing and was very excited about it. So I thought, okay. And he didn't bring his flu germs in, which is a good thing.